cast of thousands. Just kidding. Not that many. Not quite. During the past two General Conference of Elders meetings, whether you're in the hall watching it personally or whether you're at home like we were these last two times, they've introduced a software that helps for an interactive nature with the participants. You saw some of it on display if you were able to watch the presentation, the media presentation. Those numbers that were flashing and the bars that were changing and everything were a result of I don't think it's called an app, but it was a software called Menti application software. And basically there's a little dial-in code that is used for each presentation so that on this software that's on your phone or your tablet or a computer, if you had a computer, then you can respond as a participant to the questions that the presenters are asking. Does that make sense? You can see that that happens, and it's a really terrific tool because it helps, you know, it's kind of like voting in a sense, but it helps register the audience's feedback, which is, I think, really incredible. So during one of the presentations, or probably a couple of presentations for the past 2 years, you can also see the comments that individual recipients make. They didn't show it here, but in some of the, well, I don't even think the international reports won't have any of those, but they can basically show you all the questions that are raised to the presenter, and that was what was that we cut away from because the Q&A goes on for a while and didn't see any need to bring that to you. But if we had, you'd be able to see that the respondents' questions would be listed and comments as well. So sometimes there's questions, sometimes there's comments, and it was very convenient to be able to see what is on people's minds. And one of the things that has been on people's minds and last year and this year was the comment that our prophetic message is sometimes disturbing to our younger generations, or our message is one of gloom and doom when it comes to prophecy. Well, let me be upfront. I think I may have mentioned this before. I'm not in agreement with that sentiment, and this is a sentiment that is out there that, you know, there are things that we agree on and things we don't agree on, right? So several have indicated that their viewpoint is that a prophetic message is discouraging to younger people. And while I don't agree with that, it's not a problem. While I don't agree with it, I get it. I get it. Now, I'll explain in this way. I've been in the church for over 50 years. Many of you have as well. Do you know that similar sentiments were expressed way back when? When I came to the church, 18 years old, finishing my second year of community college or junior college, applied to Ambassador College, went. My brother and I were the only ones in the family at the time that were coming to church. We're the only ones in our little town, and I think even up to this day, the only ones in our little town of 2,500 people or so in Western Maryland that have ever come to the church. Although I know there were other Plain Truth subscribers back then. In fact, a neighbor was. I saw the minister drive up. I was, you know, outside throwing a ball or something. I noticed, hey, wait a minute, that's my minister's car. And he went over to my neighbor's house and had a visit. I guess they must have been Plain Truth subscribers, but they never attended services. But at any rate, I came into the church at 18 years old, and the message that I was receiving from the Church of God opened up a lot of understanding to me, as I think it's probably, you know, something that we share, many of us share that came into the church at that particular time. But I found out in moving forward and going into Ambassador College later on, and, you know, I was moving out of my teenage years into my, you know, 20s, when I went to Ambassador College, but I found out that maybe those that were just a few years younger and had maybe grown up in the church, like Terry basically grew up in the church, I didn't know her at that time, but the number one concern of young people way back when was that Christ would return, they would somehow be snatched into the kingdom of God and wouldn't have an opportunity to get married and have children and have a family. Now, it sounds incredible right now to say that, you know, but that indeed was a thing. Now, life went on, but in the back of many young people's minds who were a little bit younger than I was at the time, this didn't affect me. I didn't feel that way myself. But some may have even delayed baptism, thinking, well, if I'm baptized and Christ returns soon, I'll be part of the first resurrection and I won't be able to get married. That was a thing too. So agree or disagree, I will say that this issue of the preaching of the gospel has been something that even within our own ranks has been a concern, whether it's expressed as the message of prophecy or our message of prophecy is one of doom and gloom, or the fulfillment of it is going to prevent me from having some kind of happiness in my life. All of those that felt that way now are grandparents and great-grandparents. So it's over 50 years ago. But I get it. I understand why some people would think that way. And I'm going to explain that today. And the title of today's topic is The Problem, Cause, Solution of God's Plan. The problem, cause, solution of God's plan. You could say, I mean, it may make better sense to say the problem, cause, solution for God's plan. But the main thing I want you to remember is problem, cause, solution, because it's a simple method of analyzing a situation, and it's one we've often used going way, way, way back to understand Bible prophecy. Now, it's something that we use in business as well. Identifying the problem, isolating the cause, and then figuring out a solution. It's a very easy thing to do. It's actually a template that speakers use from time to time, and I'm using it today. Problem, cause, solution. So I believe it's an effective tool that helps us to have a balanced viewpoint about Bible prophecy. And I really think if those of you that are, we call old timers like me, if those of you that have been around for a long time will think about it, this was something that Herbert Armstrong used and many other speakers in the church used many, many years ago to help explain the world around us. And I'll tell you what, when I came into the church, understanding Bible prophecy unveiled so much understanding to me. Now, I wasn't affected as some people were by the drama of setting dates and all that sort of thing. That time had passed by 1972, basically. Maybe not for you or if you were around at that time, but for a lot of people, we were moving on from that particular time, from that particular situation. So together today, why don't we do this together? Interactive. I can't use the Menti app like we used during conference, but why don't you just track with me, and why don't we together utilize this format, this template of problem, cause, solution, to really come to a balanced viewpoint about Bible prophecy. And while I ask you to do that and ask you to track with me mentally, and hopefully I'll be able to maintain some semblance of sanity so that you can follow it appropriately and are not weirded out by the presentation. But let's track together using this template to understand Bible prophecy and understand the world that we live in. And finally, we'll conclude with why we need all three components. I think that people don't like to hear the problems, right? And I think that this is the foundational aspect of why we've seen the response from ministers and wives who are present at our conference saying our young people are getting discouraged by this message of gloom and doom. And I think that it goes back to the fact that, you know, I'm not trying to judge them or anything, but I think it goes back to the idea that we don't really like to think about things that are bad. It's unpleasant. It's not happy times. And so when the church, which it rightly should do, isolates the problems of the world and brings it to the forefront, that somehow gets translated into a message of gloominess for some reason. Well, I'm not judging anybody that has maybe come to that conclusion on their own. I think I get it. But I'd like you to turn to Matthew chapter 28. Matthew 28, verses 18 through 20, concludes the chapter of prophecy. Really, it's a prophecy. Really, I think it's a rallying cry for all of us who are called to the purpose of the church. But in Matthew 28, and verses 18 through 20, we read, "And Jesus came and spoke to them, saying, 'All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things that I have commanded to you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Amen.'" Before I began attending, I believed this church was doing that. I actually, back in those days, you had to wait a while before you were actually invited to church. You had to kind of beg to get into church, and that was kind of unfamiliar to me. It's not that way now. But before I did begin to attend, at least I was grounded in the fundamental beliefs of the church and really, really accepted them. And then learned a lot more. I mean, I was just scratching the surface and reading on my own and studying at the home. But I remember, you know, for probably the first 5 years of attendance, you know, at services in my local congregation and then later on at Ambassador College, having Bible study on Friday night and sometimes going to both services at Bricket Wood on the Sabbath, going, you know, in the morning and in the afternoon just on a regular Sabbath because sometimes we had two services. I was learning something brand new every time, and the church filled a need in my life and helped me to understand what was going on in the world, and my life was transformed. It was transformed by the information that was given to me, and I began to understand the world I lived in and why it was the way it was for the first time in my life. I mean, I saw the problems as a young person growing up. I mean, I go back to the time of knowing, hey, wait a minute, something is not right when I'm 11 years old and I'm watching Lee Harvey Oswald get murdered on live TV because I saw it happen because our eyes were glued to the set during the time of the Kennedy assassination. And as 11-year-old, I knew, not because I had any special gift or anything like that, but I knew that something was wrong. Wait a minute, this should not happen. This should not be. Of course, we're all flabbergasted by the Kennedy assassination, as it were, anyway, and then, you know, came to find out so many other things. I haven't really ever revealed what exactly happened, but I have my theories, and other people have had their theories. It doesn't really matter. It's all over and done, but it changed the world dramatically that we lived in. It led to whatever the cause was, whoever was behind it, it led to the more and more war that took place in the Vietnam War, and just when we look back and I mean, it didn't take long, even into the late 70s, to realize that it was such a useless thing, just an incredibly bad situation. And so we move to Matthew chapter 24 and verse 14. And it says, "And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end will come." That is, as Mr. Peter Eddington mentioned, that is our job, that is our duty, that is what must be done. I mean, I've even held out that, hey, the work will be finished by the two witnesses and the angel's last message and all of that. But in the meantime, right before all of that happens, there's a lot of people's lives at stake. And it's our job to make sure that we're a part of that gospel message. But here's the problem. Here's the problem. Remember, problem, cause, solution. The first step in utilizing this pattern is understanding that there is a problem. And if you haven't figured out that the last 5 years have been a whole lot different than the previous 5 years to that and the previous 5 years to that, then it's time to get on board and recognize that something drastically has changed, and the intensity of change has been monumental. And the rapidity of change within society, although from the Garden of Eden, the world has always been bad, right? It's always had evil in it. It's ramped up. And there are a lot of metrics that you can utilize to show that ramping up. But you have to understand that problem first. And maybe this is where the idea of our message being one of gloom and doom is coming from, because we do talk about the problems. And I hate to scare anybody. I don't want to unduly, you know, while we ought to be happy about the return of Jesus Christ and the kingdom of God being established on this earth, and we are, if you don't understand first problem, and if you're not able to adequately analyze it and understand the causes of it to begin with, then you're going to be lost. My parents were critical thinkers. They weren't college educated. They had probably the equivalent of it. My mother had gone to college. She had gone to musical college in London. But they were both well-read. I mean, my parents wore out their library cards, and the librarian was a close friend of my mother's. And as a result of all of that, and the fact that the schooling that they went to in the 30s for both of them was really tough. It wasn't easy. And I know in my father's case, he had to have 3 jobs during the Depression while he was a senior in high school, 3 part-time jobs to help the family survive. And yet, in New York State, you had to pass the state exams in order to get your graduation. It's not like today. It's not like where they just wave you on. I don't think they do that all the time, but you had to pass the state regents exams to get your high school diploma, which is probably the equivalent of something a little bit higher in today's age. He was a smart guy, is what I'm saying. Despite all the adversarial problems and difficulties during those times and limited time to study, he was able to pass and get his high school diploma. But they were critical thinkers, and they taught us to think critically. And back then in school, the teachers that we had in our secondary education taught us to question and to not question in a critical or like an adversarial type of fashion, but to think about what was happening and think about the conclusions that we come to. And so that was kind of hammered into my psyche, and I've kind of been built that way. And my parents were like that. And then the church helped me to reinforce the need to do that, to prove all things, whether it's in the Bible or not. And I knew that it was the message of God's kingdom that would help make disciples of all nations, because they too would begin to understand the problems of this world and how they began at the Garden of Eden, as the church was teaching me. So for many of us back in those days, we had to come to an understanding that something is wrong with the world. It's something that was in the back of my mind for a long time before that. So it wasn't a new thought necessarily, but the revelation to me was, number one, there is something better coming. And number two, there's a reason for all of these problems. However imperfect the Church of God was at the time of my calling, I'm so glad it was there. And for those of you that may have been contributing and doing things that made it possible for me to be called, man, I tip my hat to you, and I'm grateful. Those of you that are here locally, those of you that are online, I'm very happy for what happened in my life. because understanding Bible prophecy helped me frame the world that I lived in through the 60s, when I knew Vietnam War was bad, and I knew there was no good reason for it to happen. And then the early 70s, I could see that this world was even, as I mentioned earlier, witnessing and being right there as a little kid, the most troubling event of the 20th century, in many ways, the assassination of a president, something that was so unheard of. And then later on, more assassinations. Robert F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, all of these public assassinations that took place that rocked our nation. Let me ask you this. Is it possible that we have lost a little bit of that through the years? Is it possible that in some ways we have become dulled to the fact that events that are major do occur? Have we developed a shell that prevents us from understanding the reality of the world that we live in, or have we just become accepting of so many horrible things in our lifetime that it just becomes the norm? I don't know. It's different for everybody. Have we been so blessed, despite adversarial conditions, have we been so blessed, really, that maybe our ears are dull of hearing a bit? Is it possible? I mean, I'm not accusing anybody or anything, but is it possible that some of us need to really wake up and understand what's happening around us? A few days ago, I was speaking with a friend, and he's not from this country, he's from Mexico, a very thoughtful individual. We got into kind of a semi-philosophical religious discussion, and he said, Steve, he says, listen to this, you probably never heard it before. Steve, why do you think God allows these evil things to happen? We were talking about child trafficking, which he acknowledges, as a Mexican national, is happening. As he acknowledges that the drug cartels are behind this. This is the new form of revenue raising. It's even bigger now in many ways than the drug trade. And that's why one of the reasons that we're having so much illegal immigration, why so many children are being trafficked across our borders, and why there are so many unaccompanied ones, and I'm sorry if that offends anybody or if that's too hard to handle, but it's the truth. As myself and Mr. Horchak have mentioned, the Sound of Freedom movie was a powerful movie. It talked about basically one situation, one family situation that, in order to understand the totality of it, you have to multiply it by a millionfold, because that's the sad reality of it. And it's happening right out in front of us. I know I'm going to sit down with him again, because it wasn't the time or the place to be able to get into a long philosophical discussion. But basically, I told him, well, you know, this goes back a long time, back to the Garden of Eden. It goes back to the time in which we all understand man has free will, and there's evil in the world. And, you know, just as Mr. Armstrong explained many years ago, God is giving this world a huge dose of aversion therapy so that finally they'll really understand. Just along those lines, we need to have another talk, and I will do that. And not for the purpose of trying to convert him or anything like that, just for the purpose of helping. He's a thoughtful individual, and the time did not allow us to really get into it much, but I'm looking forward to that further conversation with him. God is going to intervene, but to the members of the church, to you, we need to understand just how bad the world is. But this world, this age, guided by the source that we know that it's guided by, doesn't make it easy for us to understand or know the truth. In recent years, we have seen an incredible difference in the way news is presented. and some of it has to do with technology. But basically, there are, you know, we are corporate America, right? And we are corporate international world, where we have these large mega corporations and investment houses that basically guide a lot of what's happening in the world. And media is, you heard Mr. Eddington in the clip that we played, talks about the media, his media department. Well, there is a media. And I remember a time in which a lot of that media was independent and competitive and vying for stories and back and forth, trying to get the scoop, right? But it's not like that anymore. It's not like what you and I grew up with, many of us that are children of the 50s and the 60s. It's controlled. There are about five major news organization corporations. And they basically, if you want to do an extensive study on it, I think you'd find it quite revealing. They basically all are singing the same tune. You don't really find much difference in them. It's not like the old days of ABC, CBS, NBC, maybe later on public television. I shouldn't comment. Came along, but it was those three big networks. They were sometimes very fiercely competitive with one another. It's not like that anymore. And you can prove it. You can do searches. You can do Google searches. I don't think Google will usually record everything you do, but I'm sorry, that's just the way the world is. But you can do a Google search, and you can see, you can find little vignettes that people have put together. First, they begin with one local news station. Let's say your local ABC station, and you see the two anchors that are standing there, and they're talking about a story, and you think, well, that's unique, and that's different. But then you overlap the Tucson feed with another feed from, let's say, Duluth, Minnesota, or then maybe Green Bay, Wisconsin, Duluth, Minnesota, or Green Bay, Wisconsin, or Buffalo, New York. And basically, despite the fact that the people are reporting the story are different, they're saying exactly the same thing. And then they overlap it, and you can hear that the news, which you thought is independent and for your market only, is being repeated hundreds of times. They've done these. You've seen these, right? And it's just, it's incredible. The same talking points are carried by all the major stations. And a lot of times the language is identical. One guy that the one news reporter may change one word here or there, but it's basically all the same. They get a script. Most of them are owned by the same very large investment houses. And you're wondering, well, what difference does that make? We're getting there. My main point is that we used to be able to rely on a free press in many nations to help us sort out what is happening in the world. But can you now? I'm here to tell you, you cannot. You cannot. The news is manipulated like so many other things to drive you to a certain conclusion and point of view. I'm sorry, but that's the way it is. Now, part of the answer is found in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1, a topic that we have covered many, many times in the past. Simple prophecy that says, but know this, that in the last days perilous times will come. And then let's drop down to verse 13. Don't mean to skip all the rest, but perilous times are here. But evil men and imposters will grow worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. How does that take place? Well, there's a broadcast in the air. There's a deceptive influence that is there. We'll get to that scripture in just a little bit as well. But this world is making it difficult for you to sort out what is real and what is not. But evil men are behind this. So we see the issues that have come up in the last 5 years. Let's stop, let's pause, and let's ask the question, what if? Track with me now just a bit. What if all of the bad things that we have experienced, and there have been some bad things, we're still blessed, still a great country, bringing down a notch every so often. What if those bad things that are happening are not just normal occurrences, not organic results, cause and effect? What if they are deliberate? What if they are deliberately intended in that way? Now, that may be, those of you that are watching online, if you're watching for the first time or somebody tunes into this sermon later, if I ever get around to posting it, you've heard me say this before, those of you here, but if you're looking, then maybe I'm posing a question you hadn't thought about. But what if much of what we see in terms of Bible prophecy is not just kind of the, for lack of a better word, the evolution of prophetic trends? What if it's deliberately planned by evil men who are waxing worse and worse? What if we were to come to the understanding, as a lot of people are, and I'm not the only one obviously saying this, that the biggest story of the 20th century, the COVID pandemic, what if we came to the conclusion that it was deliberately planned? Wouldn't that be a mind-blowing conclusion to come to? Yeah, that's right. What if those millions of deaths were totally unnecessary? What if the many thousands and hundreds of thousands of deaths in hospitals were actually preventable? Because with whistleblowers coming out now, I'm not going to get too much into the weeds, don't worry, but with whistleblowers coming out now by the score, it's pretty easily proven. It's not some wild-eyed, nutty thing. Now, I came from the medical background, as many of you know. I came from the pharmaceutical industry. One of the worst drugs ever produced, ever in the history of mankind, was a drug called remdesivir. Had practically no efficacy ever since its indication first came out. Causes massive liver failure and kidney failure. Look it up. You know, I mean, these are things that are easily researched. This was the number one therapeutic given to COVID-19 patients who were hospitalized. And for the most part, if you got COVID-19 and you're old, it hits you hard. Older people more so than younger people. Younger people, little kids, babies, almost non-existent, statistically speaking. Yeah, every so often. It just didn't affect them. What if you were to come to the conclusion that it was man-made? Well, there's a lot of evidence that suggests that now. It's not the nutty conspiracy people. And actually, when you get down to it, you can't really blame China anymore. Who do you blame? The good old USA, if you've been paying attention. The gain-of-function research, which was denied by top doctors in the United States, actually now has been proven beyond any shadow of a doubt to take place. Now, I'm speaking from a little bit of experience here because you remember I told you I went to a community college, that's where God called me? Right next door to the most sophisticated and acknowledged, even when I was a kid in the 50s and the 60s, bioweapons military installation ever. Fort Detrick, Maryland, a town at the time of 15,000, had an army base right in the middle of town, right next to the campus where I went to college for the first time. And we all knew it was common knowledge. What are they doing there? Wow, that's, yeah, they're working on bioweapons. You know, anthrax research. You know, now the CIA whistleblowers have come out and they've been working on fleas and ticks and infecting them with things that they can drop on whole populations. And they figure that the kill rate is pretty good and they can achieve it without any of the problems of radiation that would come from nuclear holocaust. Yeah, those things have been on the drawing boards for years. They could kill you for about $1.35 per person, which is pretty effective. Look, why is this? I've shown you in the Bible. Evil men, mad scientists, people who have as the part of their belief system that we're far too populated in this world. Got far too many people. And I can tell you this, that the people that, from Professor Malthus in England, not too far away from our Bricketwood campus, by the way, but in the 19th century, not too far away from David Yule's estate that Mr. Armstrong bought in the late 50s and turned into a college, was this mathematician by the name of Malthus, and he said, oh, we've got too many people, not enough resources. I don't think his calculations were true then, but he began a whole movement called the Malthusian movement, which people have believed in it since up all the way from Darwin to Karl Marx to Engels to Hitler. That's where this idea, Hitler got his idea for, you know, the Aryan race from the survival of the fittest. So all of this philosophy of man has guided, and it's and they have another thing in common. You know what it is? They don't believe in God. So if you don't have a moral compass that is guided by the commandments of God, then you can see why people would say, yeah, they could come up with these wacky, crazy ideas. And you think, oh, no, this just can't be. It can be. One of the greatest deceptions of all is that our problems aren't really that bad. Because the world doesn't want you to know how bad it is. I've spent a lot of time on problem and the problem cause solution, but it's my opinion that this methodology of obscuring things has been intensified in the last 7 to 8 years. So we first need to understand that our problems are intensifying by the day and that there's no going back to whatever time period we thought was great, when we were safe. Brethren, our back is against the wall, literally speaking, as a people of God. Spiritually speaking, and the only way out of this is through following through on Christ's instructions in Matthew 28 and Matthew 24. We're stuck. There's no going back. Now, moving on from the problems that began in 2019 and 2020 in the COVID pandemic crisis, we have to understand that the English-speaking nations of this world, the former bastions of liberty, the freedom of speech, the individual liberty and law and order have changed dramatically and are trying to take it away from us by day. It's not a mistake. It's not an accident. Our economies are on the threshold of imploding. And the solutions to all of these crises is going to bring about the one world government that we have always known is going to come with a single currency, and you know, you're not gonna have your cash anymore, and it's all gonna be controlled. And they've already employed these measures in some nations like China, where your social credit score, as determined by the government, allows you or does not allow you to have access to all of your funds. Are you gonna, oh, you speak out against the evil dictator? Oh, well, your bank account is reduced by 30%, sorry. Inflation, I mean, I could just spend an hour on that. It's far greater than what we're told. Far greater than what we're told. Illegal immigration, very likely a fulfillment of Bible prophecy, as we read in Deuteronomy chapter 28 and verse 43. I'm not saying this is ironclad, but we've thought about this for years. The alien who is among you shall rise higher and higher above you, and you shall come down lower and lower. The natural indigenous group of people that settled this country. Our educational system is under attack as never before with the normalization of heinous, devious agendas that blur the lines of gender. And despite our own border being as porous as a sieve, we are spending billions and billions to defend other nations' borders, and it's not in our national interest. The United States has perfected the art of endless war without declaring it on other nations. And when you examine war after World War II, you can really make a legitimate claim that any war the United States has been in has been totally unnecessary. We can talk about that in a chat. We'll have a chat today, but do you want to question that, then feel free. So how are we to understand that the world is evil when the world doesn't want us to know how evil it is or what the cause is? We've got to have the Bible explain that to us. And so when you take a look renewed at Matthew 24 and you see the signs of Jesus preceding Jesus coming, ask yourself the question, what if? What if wars and rumors of wars are a deliberate act of evil men? What if the pandemics that are indicated in the Bible in those few verses, what if they are the result of man's deliberate attempt to kill so many human beings that they can get down to this magic number of a half billion, which, you know, that's what they all say. A half billion, that's what we need. We need a half billion people and no more than that. Look it up if you don't believe me. You cannot believe much of the reporting of the news, and I hope you don't. Now let's move on to the cause. 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 3. Let's define the cause of this mess that the world is in, because we've got to understand the problem. We've got to get to the point where we're wide awake. We've got to be on fire for the preaching of the gospel and helping other people. But now let's take a look at the cause. And you know these things. 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 3. If our gospel is veiled, Paul was saying, if it's obscured, if it's veiled, if it somehow doesn't get through, it's veiled to those who are perishing, whose minds the god of this age has blinded. That's the cause. Satan the devil, the god of this world, who do not believe, lest the light of the gospel, the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine in them. And God has allowed that blinding and veil, right? So ultimately, this is the source of the deception. Its force becomes greater and greater, and we see the incredible power of this deception, as in Revelation 12 and verse 9. Revelation 12 and verse 9. So the great dragon who was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world, he was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And he's roaming around like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. He wants you. You've got a target on your back as a member of the church of God. And then we finally move to Revelation 13 and verse 3. I saw one of the heads as it had been mortally wounded. His deadly wound was healed, and all the world marveled and followed this beast, which is satanically inspired. The entire world gets to the point of deception to where it wants to follow, wants to worship this leader, and wants to worship this system. Take a look at the leaders. Take a look at the fruits of their lives. This is really important. These people that are guiding society are ungodly individuals. Now, eventually, as we see here, the guise is even more perfected, because these individuals then are thought to be godly. But now you take a look at the movers and the shakers of society and industry and hedge funds and leaders politically. They're compromised. They're ungodly. They're evil men. They're waxing worse and worse. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 9. Come to the point to where it's all of a sudden it turns around. It's religious now. It moves so quickly. It's going to happen so fast. That this man of sin, a religious leader also spoken about in Revelation 13, towards the middle of the chapter, not the beast, but the false prophet as we understand it. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan with all power. And when that happens, oh boy, all bets are off. When that happens, the change will be so dramatic. Unrighteous deception among those who perish because they marveled at the beast. They're wondering about the beast. Verse 11, and for this reason, God will send them strong delusion that they should believe the lie. God's going to allow it to happen. And in Revelation 13 and verse 8, it says, all who dwell in the earth will worship him. That is the beast and the false prophet, the whole system they will worship. And it'll make what we have gone through in the last 5 years seem like kindergarten. Now remember what Paul told Timothy about evil men. Why does it happen? Why are these evil men? Why? Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 2. Here's the reason why. Should be very obvious by now that why these things are happening is because there is a prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now works in the sons of disobedience. Take a look at the fruits of the leaders, the ones who have made things happen in the last 5 years. I'm not going to mention names. YouTube doesn't like it. Take a look at their lives. Take a look at the fruit of their lives. And tell me if those people actually believe in God, much less the Ten Commandments. They're evil, despicable, and they will stop at nothing. And if you think I'm joking, I'm not. I am deadly serious. Mass annihilation is what motivates them. Undoubtedly. From the 19th century philosophers and mathematicians, beginning with Malthus, Dalton, Darwin, all the way to Hitler, they've all believed in limiting the human race. They want to limit birth. They want to reduce population. So everything you've seen with the increase, massive increase in deaths in the 18 through 54-year-old, 40% increase over previous years that began all of a sudden, is because it's planned. It's not an accident. Of course, you don't hear that much. You can't really find that out. And you may think, wow, is that right? Yeah, you can find the actuarial statistics from the insurance companies. When you take a look at the number of fetal deaths, the number of deaths in the womb, the number of newborn babies that died suddenly, thousands of percent increase. And wow, why didn't I hear about this? Duh. I've explained it. The world doesn't want you to know, because then you'd be awake. Anybody ever heard of the Georgia Guidestones? Come on, somebody, raise your hands, big time. Let's see them. Those of you at home, raise your hands. I can't see you. Thankfully, somebody brave went and bulldozed those things several years ago. Did you hear that? Nobody really knows who built them, I don't think. Do we know who built those things? Do we know? I don't know. They're a testimony to anti-God. Have their own Ten Commandments. Yeah, and you know what the first one is? You know what the first commandment of the Georgia Guidestones is? I'm not going to give you all of them, but here's the first one. Maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. Yeah. I wrote in my little blog on the website, worldnewsandprophecyreview.com, I wrote several years ago, the Billionaires Club. Yeah, the billionaires. These guys get together every year. Okay, what can we hatch now to really do our main objective? This. 500. And because they also are ungodly, they think and believe in survival of the fittest, which is totally an anti-God. They believe in evolution. Okay, we're gods. I'm not joking. It's not Kansas, okay, anymore. How could they do number one, you say? How could they maintain population under 500 million? How could people be so bad? And that's where you fail. Because if you're a righteous person and you're projecting your good nature onto these evil monsters, I'm not going to say we deserve what we get, but you got to wake up. You got to wake up. They would never do that. Oh, don't doubt the evil that men can be led to when they have the God of this world, who has his greatest effect in evil and ungodly men. That's what Ephesians 2 and verse 2 says. They don't want you to know what they're up to. And if you pay attention to independent sources, now people say, well, what news do you listen to, Mr. Buchanan? Well, I listen to a variety of sources. I get the Epoch Times. You have to pay for that, of course. I watch OAN, which is probably one of the last and few. There's a few other independent networks out. You got to pay $5 a month for it because, you know, guess what? Liberal senators wrote to all of the major providers, DirecTV and all the major ones that carry all the cable systems, blah, 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 and they said, get this network off the air. They didn't like it because they were telling the truth about the pandemic and its origins and everything else. Oh, and yeah, by the way, I interrupted myself earlier. All that research, the gain of function, everything began in the United States. University of Texas Medical School in Galveston transferred to North Carolina, then transferred because we actually have laws against this gain of function research because it's hideous and wretched. And at one time, people recognized what was good and bad. And so all of that research was then transferred, guess where? China and Ukraine. Chat, if you will, that we won't record it. Anyway, so it sounds like gloom and doom, and I'm sorry about that, but gloom and gloom is the message of this world. It's not the church's message. It's what this world is doing to us. And it's meant to discourage and leave no hope for the future. Oh, you're not going to have a future. My kids are discouraged. They're discouraged about the church's message of prophecy. Poppycock. The world's message is meant to demoralize and dispirit the natural tendency that human beings have been bred with, that God has given them to work and to achieve and to be successful. And that's where we return to the ultimate hope for mankind, the soon coming kingdom of God. The gospel means literally good news. God has provided a solution. Let's turn to Revelation 19 and verse 7. Jesus Christ is coming to rescue mankind. But if you don't understand how much it needs rescuing, then you're lost. It needs it badly, more badly than I can even describe, or I can thump on the podium and shout and yell. Let us be glad and rejoice and give him glory, for the marriage of the Lamb has come and his wife has made herself ready. Let's make ourselves ready. Stay close to God. Stay close to God in study and in prayer. As you know all too well, I could say dozens of millennial prophecies that outline the goodness, the bounty, the freedom of God's kingdom established on the earth for the very first time. Now, at this point, I want to say something about our message. Sometimes I think it's possible. Maybe not, but I think sometimes we may have emphasized, especially when we get to the Feast of Tabernacles and realize that Christ returns on trumpets and, you know, the glorious kingdom of God is set up, I think we sometimes emphasize the whiffum too much. The whiffum. Yeah, we emphasize the whiffum too much instead of focusing on the greater meaning. Now, some of you may be saying, what did I miss? What's WIFM? WIFM. W-I-F-F-M. What's in it for me? Sometimes we've gone that route. You know, the kingdom is going to relieve a lot of problems. What's in it for me? And of course, if we're looking to what's in it for me, isn't that antithetical to everything that a Christian should be thinking about? Shouldn't we be out for everybody else? Shouldn't our focus be elsewhere instead of us inheriting the kingdom of God? Shouldn't it be over the beautiful things that is going to create for all of mankind? What about those who survive through the great tribulation and Jacob's trouble? There's going to be people. You know, These evil monsters want to reduce the world's population. They want to reduce it by 90%. That's their avowed purpose. And, you know, in some ways, the devil is behind all of that. And, you know, with this conflagration that is coming up, with what man is doing to himself, they're going to do their best to get there to that number. But I can think of no better conclusion in Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 1. The word that Isaiah the son of Amos saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem, "Now it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains." So God is going to be over all governments, mountain being a symbol of government, "and shall be exalted above all the hills, the smaller governments, the smaller nations, and all nations shall flow to it." It's not just that all nations are going to go to Jerusalem, they're going to be attracted. You know, once we get rid of this mess, once we get rid of this mess of this world and the God of this world, and he's put away, then people will be excited. "Many nations shall come and say, let's go to God's government. That's where the answers are. To the house of the God of Jacob," they'll recognize the descendants of Israel. Everyone will be called to Jacob. Everyone will be called an overcomer. "He will teach us his ways, and we shall walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law." We need to focus on how we will also be a part of that solution. Let that be what drives you, understanding the solution is there. "He," Christ, "shall judge between many nations and rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore." Jesus Christ is returning to this earth to cause all of this to happen. We've reviewed the problems of this world, some of them, the cause. This is the solution that God is providing. Brethren, let's align our lives with this purpose as never before.